Good evening and welcome to this Monroe City Council meeting for July 10th, 2012. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Edie would please take roll call.
Councilperson Gary?
Here.
Cuddaback?
Here.
Williams?
Here.
Camp?
Present.
Davis?
Present.
Gamble?
Here.
Hanford?
Let the record show that Mr. Hanford, or Councilmember Hanford, is not here. He did receive word that he's not well and will not be in attendance this evening. Okay, please join me if you would for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Set aside for citizens to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes and appreciate your name and address for the record. I do have one individual who signed up, and I believe it's Gloria Schaffner.
Yes.
If you would.
Like to speak.
Ma'am, if you could approach the podium. Yeah.
I'm not used to that. I like to give you in the back of the room.
Yeah. And then if you would, your name and address for the record.
My name and address?
Yes, please.
My name is Gloria Schaffner, and my address is 17658 Stanton Street, Southeast, here in Monroe. It's just off 179th. Every 4th of July has been bad, but this year it was 10 times worse than it ever has been. And what I was concerned with, when I stayed gone all day until 9 o'clock, when I came home, I had to literally drive on the wrong side of the road, grab around cars, a car parked alongside the mailboxes, and down four more houses to get to my house. And I was just appalled. You could not see the end of the street. It was so blue and so foggy gray. And I know that they were letting off illegal fireworks because they just rattled the house. I have asthma and COPD, and I know there's several people on my street that has the same thing. And so I would like to see Monroe find a place for them to go shoot their fireworks off, and not be preferably down by the river. I find fireworks on my roof, in my yard. It literally, last year, plugged up my drain. I had one of those little spinners, and it landed right in my downspout, and I had water running behind my gutter and over my gutter. And so, between that and it being a safety hazard, and there are so many kids out there. And I know that from what I've seen, because I do a lot of walking around, I know one person spent $1,000, if not more, on fireworks because there was a like 5 foot long spot with fireworks 2.5 feet deep and 4 feet high. And that's not the only ones that I've seen that had fireworks like that. And I just want to see if there's anything that anybody can figure out what we should do, other than waking up. I also have a CPAP machine because I stop breathing in the middle of the night, and I'm Jennifer, on the 5th, the morning of the 5th, I opened my eyes and I say, oh, thank God, my house is still standing and I'm still alive. That's how I feel about the Ford. They could, you know, I mean, we get it from the fairgrounds, and this year, I don't know, for people not having any money, they spend it on food, so they better not complain about anything going up. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much.
I don't have anybody else signed up at this time, but if there's anyone from the audience who'd like to address council, you may do so. Please approach the podium, give your name and address for the record. Okay. All right. Seeing none, then we'll move on to our first item here, business and action. Today we have two requests for appointments. First, we have Diane Dirksen, who I'm bringing before council tonight, asking for a motion to confirm her appointment to the Planning Commission. We've had an opening and a need for some time, and Ms. Dirksen and I, and our institution had submitted a letter of interest, and myself, Administrator Brazel, Paul Popelka, Jeff Sachs met with Diane, had a wonderful conversation. Diane came about a year and a half ago. We were just debating where it was from, and it's Omaha, Nebraska. Mr. Gearing, Councilman Gearing, you might like that. So, and your light's on, so I wonder if that knows anything. As you see before you, she has shared what why her interest for the Planning Commission. What struck us, I believe, was that she came from a similar sized town, rural, even had a farming community, came from a farming community. She's seen development, seen how it's done well, seen how it can be improved. And from that perspective, there's a lot of similarities to where she's come from to here in Monroe. As I said, we had a good conversation, a lot of enthusiasm, and from that conversation, I think we all unanimously concluded that having Ms. Dirksen as a member of the Planning Commission would be a valuable asset to that board. And so tonight I'm asking for a motion to confirm. And Diane, would you like to address council, say anything in addition? No, she's here tonight, a little shy. Anyways, well, with that, I'll call on Councilmember Geary.
Thank you. I move to approve the mayor's appointment of Diane Dirksen to the Planning Commission.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Cutterback to confirm the mayor's appointment of Diane Dirksen to the Planning Commission. Any other comments or questions? No? Okay, with that said, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Well, welcome. Thank you for your interest and welcome to the Planning Commission. Secondly, we, myself, City Administrator Brazel, who else is with us? And Betsy Lewis. Betsy Lewis from the library met with Michael Mates to talk about a position on the library board. And we met for about an hour. And Mr. Mates is here this evening. Mr. Mates, you came to Monroe from, and I was trying to remember the country, but
Moldova. Upper left corner of the Black Sea between Romania and Ukraine.
Mr. Mates has very extensive travel experience with the State Department. And but he also has a great love and appreciation for books, for reading, and had a great suggestion in trying to implement story time or story reading at the library. We were able to connect. I was able to connect on a personal level because my children and I have read together for many years aloud, and I think it's helped a great deal in their growth and so forth. So, again, we had a great conversation. Mr. Mays brings a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of experience, as well as a lot of wonderful ideas. And I believe it would be a wonderful addition to the library board. And is Betsy here? No. I think she would agree. In fact, we were all very enthusiastic after our conversation. So with that said, would you like to say anything else about yourself, Mr. Mays? Or address the
after,
council
anyway? After living in foreign cities and vibrant foreign cities, meaning noisy foreign cities, it's a great pleasure to live in a quiet section of Monroe up to the west, up to the east of us. And I'm sorry to hear about the problems with the fireworks. But it's wonderful to be here. It's an honor to be appointed, and I suspect it will be a pleasure to serve.
Thank you. Thank you very much. With that said, Councilmember Ketterbeck.
Thank you. I'll make a motion to confirm the mayor's appointment of Michael. Is it Mates?
Mates, yes.
Mates to the library board. One question. Can you speak Latin?
Ita est.
There you go.
Okay. Motion was made by Councilmember Ketterbeck and seconded by Councilmember Gamble. Any other questions or comments? Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Well, again, thank you for your interest. Welcome aboard the library board. All right, appreciate it. Okay.
Hey, Brian, just a moment. Internet connectivity is down across the board. Okay. No visibility to any agenda or any items.
See the agenda, but
we can't click on
the
captions. Yeah, I can't get the agenda anymore.
Kind of the lights come on. I'll take up the agenda.
So I'm going to cover the purpose why we're running the levy.
the cost, and then what happens if it doesn't pass. So the first thing that I handed out to you was this large paper. And this was taken off the assessor's annual reports. And in the annual report, they will do the average value of a home in a city. They don't do it for fire districts, so of course we picked the city of Monroe. And as you can see, we took the value and what we charge per thousand and what the average homeowner in the city of Monroe paid to fire district 3 in total taxes annually. And in 2009, the average homeowner in the city of Monroe paid to fire district 3 $565.55. We have a statutory limit for our fire levy at $1.50, and for our EMS levy, we have 50 cents. As the AVs dropped, that price per thousand went up, and we reached our cap, and then we started losing money. So as you can see, that it's projected that the average homeowner in 2013 will pay $205 less to Fire District 3, which is about a 37% loss of revenue. And 80% of our revenues come from property taxes. So we've seen this happening in 2009 and 10. We started gearing up. We made cuts to discretionary spending. Our employees didn't take pay raises for 2011 or 2012. We put off some capital purchases for new fire engines and pneumatic units. So we're at the point now that our expense budget is $751,000 more than our revenues. And we've been using some reserves to offset that. We tried to do everything we could, and then the commissioner decided they want to go out to the taxpayer and let them decide what level of service that they want to have. So this levy isn't to go out and hire new firefighters, build new fire stations. This levy is to maintain the current level of operations that we have today and that we've had since 2009. We haven't hired anybody in the fire department since 2008, so we've maintained the same level of staff. The cost, first of all, the next sheet I handed out is our fact sheet that the fire department put together. We had this reviewed by the Public Disclosure Commission, and this will be going out at the end of this week to every household in our fire district to educate people about our fire levy. The average homeowner in the city of Monroe is projected to pay $14.40 a month if this levy passes, more than what they're paying now. That's $172.80 annually, which is still less than what they paid to Fire District 3 in 2009, so we're not going back and trying to recoup the whole cost. If this levy doesn't pass, the commissioners have said that they're going to run it twice, so it's going to run again in the general election. But if it doesn't pass, we will close the Wagner Hill Station, which is north of town that covers the north side of our fire district and puts a fire station on the north side of the railroad tracks. We will lay off 12 of our 40 firefighters. We will terminate. We have a part-time firefighter program where we pay a minimum wage and two of them work each shift, which we have three shifts, so they work the weekdays. We'll terminate that program. That's six part-time firefighters that will terminate that program. That's kind of an agreement we had with the firefighters union when we implemented that program. Before we lay a career firefighter off, we have to get rid of that program. We will cut our special operations programs, which means swift water, tech rescue, and hazardous materials. And we'll rely on the county for swift water, the sheriff's office, and larger departments to come in and take care of. So we'll wait longer for a building collapse, if something needs to be rescued from a trench. Well, also in 2008, because revenues were good, the assessed values went up, the commissioners in 2008 passed a resolution where people that reside in our fire district, if we transport them for EMS purposes, we will build an insurance, Medicare, private insurance, and write off the unpaid portion. If you don't have insurance, we write it off. If this levy fails, we'll have to probably implement where we go back and bill our taxpayers for EMS transports. We currently do bill people that are non-residents. We bill their insurance and the unpaid portion they pay where we send them to collections. So that's kind of, what our levy is for, what it's going to cost, and what happens if it doesn't pass. Is there any questions at all? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Chief. Okay, Council, anything on the consent agenda to be pulled? If not, entertain a motion to approve. Okay, we are going to pull item 3 on the consent agenda. And how about a motion to approve items 1 and 2?
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Cutterbeck, to approve consent agenda items 1 and 2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So pulling item 3, because one of the bills is for my current employer, and out of abundance and caution, I'm going to dismiss myself from the chambers for the voting on the approval of the bills.
All right. Abundance of caution, let the record note that Councilmember Gamble is now leaving the chambers due to a bill that is being paid for his for the company that he works for. All right, Councilmember Gearing.
Motion to approve consent agenda item number 3.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Camp. Approve consent agenda item number 3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Councilmember Gearing. Councilmember Gamble is now returned to the chambers. All right, new business. And first on the agenda here is private use of city property. And we have Mr. Feilberg, Mr. Roberts.
So Mr. Roberts is looking at me, isn't he? Okay. There are several places around town where people have built fences and other things on to either easements or property that the city owns. Right at the current time, it's kind of reached a boiling point at the Lord's Lake subdivision. There are some people who have extended their yards into our property by building sheds and trampolines and nicely landscaped gardens, planting trees and things like that, which limits the city's ability to maintain their property, keep the blackberry vines from growing up. And so the people who haven't built things across the property line are complaining to us about the blackberries invading their property from our property. But we can't get to them because the people who have built things have limited our ability to get to that part of the property because there's a drainage ditch on the very close to the west side of the property. So we aren't able to take out a large mower and things like that to do that. We have to do everything by hand in order to maintain that property. So there are, we're looking for staff council direction on what we should do with this. We have sent them letters requesting that they remove their encroachments. To date, they have not done that. In fact, we've had people calling saying, well, if you're not going to make my neighbors move that, I'm going to make my backyard bigger also. So we want to make sure we take this, get this under control before more people do this. We want to keep people from doing that. So there's basically four options that we thought of, and we may think of others. One is to notify the people that they have, a certain amount of time to remove the encroachments, and if they don't do that, the city will come in and remove that for them and then bill them for that cost of removal. Second one is to basically quit claim the property to them. However, you can't do that. You can't do it for a few of them and every other. It has to be everybody. There's 22 pieces of property that this affects. Give them the property, and then the other one is to sell them the property. And once again, it has to be done to everybody, so you can't just sell it to the ones who want to buy it. And then the fourth option is basically just to say, oh, well, never mind, let people do what they would like on the city property. They cover everything?
Thanks.
Okay. And then just after doing all the math on the impact of the budget, probably if we send the or give or sell the property to the people, it will be necessary to do 22 boundary line adjustments, and the cost of that would probably be about $30,000 altogether after surveys and fees and all that kind of stuff. So.
$30,000 in total.
In total, yeah. And that's a rough guess. We might be able to get a quantity discount from a surveyor if we hire them to do 22 boundary line adjustments immediately adjacent to each other.
Jake, anything to add to that?
No, sir.
Okay. Councilmember Cadaway?
Couple questions, Brad. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The first option was removing the items that are restricting, but I thought I heard you mention that they planted trees, and so are you saying that we would remove, because I can't see us remove a couple things, but not everything, so you're saying we remove trees,
ornaments,
sheds,
shrubberies, rockeries.
Rockeries,
yeah.
Landscaping, mm-hmm. Any of that.
Right.
What do you think the cost, and then you're going to put the cost towards to them?
However much cost, yeah, right.
Okay. The other question I just had was, you said we have to offer to sell it, if we choose number three, that we have to offer to sell it to everyone, which it sounds like it's 22 properties. Does everyone have to accept it?
Well, that's, you know, we can't have some of the people own the property, other people not own the property, because then we still can't get to our property.
Right. Well, that's why I think I'm trying to look at all these options and go, are they even really viable? Because not everybody would probably take upon us to buy the property. So is option three really even a viable option? Okay. Those are my questions right now.
Councilmember Gary?
Thank you. And I had a chance to speak with Vince about this earlier as well. My understanding is that some people actually have moved. There were other quote-unquote offenders, and they've actually have moved their stuff off of the city property. I believe that's correct. And people that are listed here before us essentially have been told and simply just haven't done anything. This is, wouldn't be the first warning that they're getting that they're on the phone. They know what they're doing. They've done it on purpose, and essentially they're, you know, it could be considered theft. I guess, I mean, it's city property, and there's no, they've been warned, they know what they're doing. To me, option number one would really be the only option, that they need to remove all the items. It's not their property, and it's causing our employees, it's causing our city workers to be unable to do their job, which then compounds on down the stream. As far as I'm concerned, that's, they need to move it, they need to be given a deadline, and the cost of that is something that they bear. They made a choice to do something that they know was not right, and there's costs associated with those kind of choices, and the city should not bear. Or the rest of the taxpayers in the city who didn't do this should have to bear that cost. So as far as I'm concerned, that's the only solution that I'd be in support of. I believe also one of these property owners actually serves on our ethics board, which I also have a question with that as well. With that being said, I'll let others speak if others have items. But number one would certainly be the only one that I'd be interested in. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Brad, was there any reply to any of these things from people you sent out?
We've had discussions with folks, but no formal replies as far as
no written reply?
No.
Now, also, require the access on the west side of the ditch in order to access the larger parcel in order to mow it. Is that how it works?
Basically, yeah. We actually did mow it one time, and we built a bridge. It wasn't something, after I went out and inspected the site, I didn't really feel was a safe act, and so I asked our employees to not do that again, nor was it efficient, and so that's essentially, to get to it, we have to go from the furthest north point around to the west side. Yeah.
So in the event everything were taken out, and because I walked on the east side of the church, and it is up to my waist in terms of grass.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So rather than have that extended to the west side of the ditch, the whole area would be mowed. But you require that.
Not unless there was a specific reason to do so, such as if someone called to complain about blackberries or noxious vegetation, weeds, alder trees, things like that. Those are things that we typically try to address before they get out of control and take over an entire ditch area. We tend to like to leave grass to grow and things that are not what we consider noxious or nuisance vegetation. Mm-hmm. It's good for the environment. It's good for the ditch lines. It helps to clean the water. So if it is growing up on fence lines, things of that nature, then we will address it when it starts to encroach on folks' property. So, yeah, it wouldn't be mowed like a ball field if that's what you're getting at.
Even, I'm just picturing what's currently on the east side of the ditch would now be on the west side of the ditch, right up against our fences.
Not necessarily up against our fences. We try to maintain a small area and allow the rest to be as it would be in nature.
Okay. And you may not be able to answer this, but since there are especially trampolines, what's the liability of the city someone is currently injured by a trampoline on city property, are we responsible for that? Anybody have any?
I would have to defer to legal counsel or risk manager.
I know. I sent a question earlier this week, but I didn't know, but then I was told that it wasn't going to be here. So I'll defer this question, but that it looks like you want to say something.
We did do a little review on that, and because these people have been notified by the city, the liability is on them. However, anybody anytime can sue us. We have that happen. People trip on sidewalks or whatever, but they have been notified and they are in violation.
Yeah, that's all we got right now. Thank you.
Okay, well, most importantly, Jacob is seeking direction. Brad is seeking direction with regards to the four options here this evening. So we appreciate more input and discussion with regards to the options so that we can leave here this evening with an action item for us, for staff. Councilmember Ketteback?
I was just going to make a motion to go with option one. I think, you know, looking at the other options, that option one is really our only option. Option two could incur a cost to the city of, according to Brad, $30,000, 22 properties through the boundary line adjustment. Not everybody might want to do it. And then option three with offering to sell, and not everybody might want to buy it. And I don't think we can allow continued future use without restrictions. So I'll make a motion to direct staff to notify the property owners in question within the specified time and date. Do you know how long you're going to give them?
Was actually looking for some direction from you folks.
Okay, so maybe we need to discuss that. But you can make an
sure.
To remove all items restricting access and encroaching on city property. If said items aren't removed by the deadline, charges for removal will be levied if the city needs to complete the work on their behalf.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made by Councilmember Ketteback, seconded by Councilmember Gearing. May I suggest, because of weather, that we take a, I mean, weather plays the most important piece in terms of our ability to get back there make the removals or remove the trees and things like that. So certainly before it starts to rain again next week.
Yeah.
So by the end of August, I mean, that would give, or June or July, that would be 45 days. Do you think that's enough time?
I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 days is fair. There are some significant things that need to be removed. I think that needs to be kept in mind as far as giving them an adequate amount of time to do that. It is a lot of work in some cases. So I would think 45 to 60 is reasonable. Okay.
So with that, if someone wants to make a friendly amendment to the motion, that would be fine. Councilmember Camp?
I have an additional question. So if the, in one of the cases, they've actually extended their lawn down to the ditch. Right. So would they be required to take it to the extreme and let it go back to nature at that point?
Or no, sir. If a homeowner would like to maintain like that, we appreciate it and would certainly allow that usage. It's the obstruction of access that is the concern.
So it's the fences, the chicken coops, the trampolines, that are the
strokes. Exactly, yeah. When folks do that with their yards, we greatly appreciate it, and I think it's wonderful that they're able to take care of that. It's fantastic, actually.
So there would be an issue if they just had mutual, if they allowed access to whatever you needed.
That's correct.
Unless they did routine maintenance, even to the
absolutely. We have some other spots like that up in the Foothills neighborhood. There's an easement access there where actually all of the homeowners maintain it as if it were their property. They mow their yards there, and they understand that we do come through from time to time with machinery, and it works really well.
So we have a precedent, and there's been no issues with that.
Correct. That's possible.
And I assume city attorney will mention something. All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. My friendly minimum is going to be 30 days, but it sounds like 45 might be a better number. So I'll make a friendly amendment to include the time frame to be within 45 days.
If the maker of the motion accepts.
Yeah.
The motion accepts the friendly amendment by the seconder of the motion, who also accepts. Okay, any other comments or questions for staff? I think we have fair direction. With that, we'll take a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, gentlemen. Okay. Final actions. Councilmember Gary, there's a spot. Is this spot you want to get out of the end? Okay, first up is the ordinance adopting 2012 comprehensive plan amendments for proposed land use in Galloway, Texas. This is the second final reading. And Mr. Ballhead.
Thank you, Mayor. Today we have the three ordinances before you for consideration for second and final reading. The First Airfield, North Kelsey Downtown, and East Monroe. I do have a couple of images of each one that I can go through very quickly just to acquaint the audience with the properties. But basically, we're here to take questions from the council as we consider this final adoption of these, but I'll try to just take a couple minutes. And
Before you do, we will go in the order that we have listed here. And with that said, Councilman Cutback, I believe, is going to...
Yes, I'm
going
to recuse myself on the First Airfield. My employer owns property in the overlay, so just out of abundance of caution, I need to exit on that. Can you guys discuss that and can you make a vote on that?
Yes. Yeah, we'll well, that is a question, Brad. We can vote on each separately, but all need to be done tonight.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. Okay.
I just have a couple of images of each one. This is First Airfield. It involves about 65 acres to be change from limited open space airport, from a number of different land uses, service commercial, some residential to limited open space airport or a LOSA. And the project includes other potential related development, both aviation and non-aviation types of uses, extending the runway to the west. The actual application, if it is approved, this is what the land uses would look like. Part of where the purple area, part of it is now LOSA, so this consolidates a larger area of LOSA to be dedicated for airport operations and, as I say, related kinds of development. That's the first one. The second ordinance...
Since Councilmember Cutback recused herself from this one, shall we just finish this one off so she can come back in here?
Okay, that's a good idea. Sure.
Okay, Council, anything? Any questions for Mr. Patelka on First Airfield Ordinance Number 01621, 2012? If no, yes.
I have.
Mr. Robert.
I was going to do this thing, since we're splitting things, so that you can consider the cumulative impacts. I have a brief statement to read regarding open space.
Okay.
So, and I'll probably have to do it again when Councilmember Cutback comes back. The City of Monroe currently has approximately 740 acres of land designated as either limited open space, mostly in private ownership, or parks open space in public ownership. This includes the following areas with approximate acreages: Bug Island, 150 acres; Sky River Park, 50 acres; the Cabin Site, 245 acres; Lake Tide, 69 acres; the Airport Wetlands, 45 acres; and East Monroe, approximately 80 acres; and about 82 acres of miscellaneous open space around town. The East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment will redesignate approximately 50 acres from limited open space to general commercial. However, only about 18 acres is being marketed for development, with most of the remainder being native growth protection areas. The First Air Comprehensive Plan Amendment will redesignate approximately 11 acres of the airport wetlands from limited open space to limited open space airport.
Okay. Councilmember Gary?
Motion to accept the second final reading of ordinance number 16-2012 in the name of land use designation in the vicinity of First Airfield.
Second. All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Williams. For the record, we'll have the City Administrator read the official ordinance title.
Ordinance number 16-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, relating to the 2012 Comprehensive Plan Amendments, amending the land use designation in the vicinity of First Airfield, establishing a definition for the limited open space airport land use designation, and amending the land use element with supporting text CPA 2012-01, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Any other questions or comments for Mr. Pavelka? That said, we'll go ahead and vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Second ordinance up tonight is for North Kelsey and downtown. Recall, this is really about changing text in the comprehensive plan land use element, basically to reflect how North Kelsey is being developed and will continue to develop, and also lend some further support to downtown and how that is going to develop, and to incentivize some revitalization downtown. This is, as I say, it's a text amendment, and both of these master plans are being detached from the comp plan as a regulatory tool. But as a reminder, the design standards for each of those are currently enforced through the municipal zoning code, and that does not change. I'd be happy to take any questions on this one.
Thanks. Motion to accept the second final reading of ordinance number 017-2012 to repeal the adoption by reference of the North Kelsey Development Plan and the Downtown Master Plan and amending the land use element related to North Kelsey and the downtown area.
Second. Motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Gamble. We'll have City Administrator Bradley read the official title of the ordinance.
Ordinance number 017-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, relating to the 2012 Comprehensive Plan Amendments, amending Ordinance 015-2003 to repeal the adoption by reference of the North Kelsey Development Plan, amending Ordinance 036-2008 to repeal the adoption by reference of the Downtown Master Plan, and amending the land use element with specific goals and policies related to North Kelsey and the downtown area, CPA 2012-B, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Councilmember Gearing? Oh, I just never turned off the light.
Sorry,
my bad. Any other questions, comments for Mr. Pavelka? Take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. We'll be on. Item C.
Our last ordinance is East Monroe, just east of town, north of Highway 2. It's about total of about 68 acres, 18 acres of which has been taken out as a center of the shoreline designation, leaving 50 that Brad mentioned earlier in the statement. The proposal is to change the land use from limited open space to general commercial. Aerial view, obviously. And this is the actual form of the land use amendment. It would change the red area, which is general commercial, from limited open space. It's residential to the north, and that limited open space and that finger from the west is the shoreline area, as is the last parcel within the town limits to the east as limited open space. Again, at this point, I will take questions on this one. I do have a couple other images, one for this and one for the airport. Another image for this one should be needed.
Yes, you need to read, yes.
The city of Monroe currently has approximately 740 acres of land designated as either limited open space, mostly in private ownership, or parks / open space in public ownership. This includes the following areas with approximate acreages: Buck Island, 150 acres, Sky River Park, 50 acres, the Cabin Site, 245 acres, Lake Tai, 69 acres, Airport Wetlands, 45 acres, East Monroe, 80 acres, and approximately 82 acres of miscellaneous open space around town. The East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment will redesignate approximately 50 acres from limited open space to general commercial. However, only about 18 acres is being marketed for development, with most of the remainder being in native growth protection areas. The first air comprehensive plan amendment will redesignate approximately 11 acres of the airport wetlands from limited open space to limited open space airport. Thank you.
Councilor, I've got back. That was read earlier. You were out. I wanted to reread the statement.
Appreciate that.
Any questions, comments for Paul? Entertain a motion to accept the second and final reading ordinance 018-2012, amending the land use designation of East Monroe and amending the land use element of supporting text.
So moved. Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring, seconded by Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Cutterback.
I was just going to state that I will be voting no on the motion, and I've stated my reasons at previous council meetings, so I won't go over them in detail again, but I'll remain consistent and vote no on this motion.
Councilmember Gehring?
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I do appreciate all the documentation that we have here with regards to the findings and conclusions. I just want to thank staff. I know this. There's been a lot of work put into this, and each of the reasons why they're from the staff, and the reason we came from economic development to land use and historic preservation and shoreline management, all listed here. And I appreciate the work that went in and the compelling reasons that are included here as well.
Councilmember Gamble.
I appreciate the information too. I will be voting on how it will be consistent. So I have been in the past the particular issue, and basically in keeping with the concept of, you know, wanting to hear out the a final appeal on the AS, the phase DIS approach that there was unanimously recommended by the Planning Commission. I mean, though they didn't, you know, they were split on the overall, but they unanimously agreed that they would like to see us wait until that was fulfilled. So I'm honoring that piece and we'll be voting.
Further? All right. With that said, we'll take a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
4-2, it passes with Councilmember Cutterback and Gamble in opposition. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is authorized to proceed with right-of-way purchase. Would you like to read the ordinance title that was just voted on and approved for the record?
I would love to. ordinance number
018-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, relating to the 2012 Comprehensive Plan Amendments, amending the land use designation of certain property located north of US 2 near the eastern city limits, commonly known as the East Monroe Area, from limited open space LOS to general commercial GC, amending the eastern city limits US 2 and Rivermont Ridge description in the City of Monroe and the land use context section of the land use element of the comprehensive plan, amending the existing land uses within the city and UGA section of the land use element on page LU-20, amending policy LUP-1.1 of the land use element regarding the definitions of limited open space and general commercial, amending land use goal 4 of the land use element regarding preservation of agricultural lands, adopting legislation findings supporting the amendments, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Okay,
thank you. All right. With that, we'll move on to the purchase of right-of-way. And that is Mr. Fowler.
People have come to you several times about this, the redevelopment of Fremont Street from Lewis to Ann, and previously the City Council had selected option C, which is having the 14-foot wide lanes to allow for extra room for bicycles along that stretch of roadway, which doesn't require the acquisition of an additional 4 feet of right-of-way. We had, authorized by council, we hired a consultant to look at the right-of-way, and their estimate of how much the right-of-way should cost us to acquire is $56,000. It's likely a total of $91,000 to acquire the right-of-way, including their fees. We had guessed earlier it was going to be $110,000 to acquire the right-of-way. So it's, at least initially, it's cheaper, but it is a negotiation process, so we have to talk to the neighbors, and they can say, but you know, you're digging up whatever, and so we need a little bit more money, so that process. But right now what we need to do is, if you're interested in proceeding with this, so that we can start the negotiation process with the property owners, and once, you know, no final settlements or money will change hands until it is approved by the council. And so we're recommending that you authorize us to proceed with negotiations to purchase the necessary right-of-way for the East Fremont Street Utility Replacement Project.
Councilmember Gary?
Thank you. And Brad wasn't clear on here how this would be paid for.
Well, the street
fund... it's right on here, and
might not be on there. The street fund is what we're doing, and right now we are looking like we will have enough money in the street fund. And as we negotiate, and we're actually currently started the 2013 budget process, so we'll be keeping you informed and make sure that there still is enough money to acquire the property.
And we wouldn't be giving up another project to be doing this with that money? We planned on doing this year.
Yes.
Okay, and versus let's take these 10 things off
right
to do this. Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. If memory serves, we kind of already authorized this a few months ago. Mm-hmm. The only caveat was we wanted to get some more information before we just assumed the $110,000 number would be, you know, we were worried it could double or triple or whatever. So it seems like this has come back and it's favorable, you know, $50,000 or so. So with that being said, I will make the motion to authorize to proceed with negotiations to purchase necessary right-of-way for the East Fremont Street Utility Replacement Project.
Second.
All right, motion is made by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Cutback to authorize to proceed with negotiations to purchase necessary right-of-way for the East Fremont Street Utility Replacement Project. questions, counsel? All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. All right. Moving on, resolution adopting reserve policy. Diane?
City Council Finance Committee has been working on the reserve policy for a long time. A lot of effort has been gone into it. I cannot overstate the importance of this policy. I think we've all seen the damage that a failing economy can do to a municipality. This policy will protect the city in the future from future economic downturns. It is a sound financial policy. It's something that I'm frankly was surprised the city didn't already have, and I think it's a really good policy that the committee has put together. I assume everyone has read it. I can go over the details of it if you like, but I don't want to read it to you. And I think the finance committee themselves can speak of the policy because they're intimately familiar with it. They've been working very hard on it. That being said, does anyone have any questions about it or any areas you want me to point out or talk about on the policy?
Councilor Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a lot of questions, so I'll just kind of go through them one at a time. And they kind of relate not just to the reserve policy, but the next item on the agenda, which is the resolution declaring the abuse of funds from land sales. And so I don't know if these questions are for you or whoever can answer them, but one of the things that we'll be talking about next talks about refunding the general fund gap in the reserve funds, and it talks about being $2.4 million short of the reserves. And while that's the cumulative number, there's two balances that we're actually over on per policy, and that's the risk management fund and the facilities management fund. And so I guess the question to council is, what do we do with the overages from those funds once we adopt this policy? Do we leave them as overages, or do we move them out into other funds? And what's the mechanism that we can do that? Because I know once they're in some of these designated funds, getting them out is not always possible. And so I guess my recommendation is leaving them in as overages, just for two reasons. One, I don't know what the effort to get them out is. The second one is, one of them that we show overages right now is the facilities management. And if you look at that fund, it's actually less than the Info and Technology Services Fund. And I believe the reason it's less is because it's based on the facilities plan, which there's been no money in the budget for so long that they just haven't been asking for anything. And so, you know, it would be my recommendation to leave both of those funds as with the overages, and then we would potentially have $47,000 next year that they could use on some facilities projects. That does change, though, our cumulative shortage from $2.4 million to $2.5 million. So I would just like to get direction from council on what we do with those two fund balances that are.
Diane, would you also explain to the rest of council members what the risk management fund is, purpose of the fund?
Yeah. First of all, Council Member Williams is referring to this page. I don't know if all of you are looking at it or not. And if you look on the very right side of it and go down to the middle, he's talking about where it shows the current year's reserves that we have and then what the policy would call for. And as you can see, both the facilities management and the risk management have more in them now than what the policy would call for. The risk management fund, what we use that for, risk management reserve, it's for any insurance type claim that our insurance company would not cover. We have really good liability insurance. However, there are a few instances where they may not cover something. For instance, I don't know if the city blatantly violates the law or something. And the other thing is we have a $1,000 deductible for every insurance claim made on our policy. And generally what happens is we just take it out of our operating funds because, you know, we have a few claims every year and we just accept it as an operating cost. However, if we were some year hit with, say, like, you know, 30 claims in 1 year, that's $30,000 we'd have to come up with. You know, we may not have that much to pay the deductible on. So in that case, we would go to the risk management fund. And that's what it's for.
Councilor Geary?
Thanks. I just want to respond to Councilor Williams' comments. First of all, I would prefer to leave the overages where they are, so I would certainly agree with that. I think it's just best to leave that there. Hopefully it won't, but eventually may get spent, but for the time being, it means that there's less to put in should there be anything drawn out of that particular account. So I think that's a good thing. And then secondly, if there is an increase in the amount that would need to be put into the reserve policy to bring it up to speed with 2.4 to 2.5, I would just suggest only putting $450,000 in the council contingency fund at the bottom. So, and that seems to make the most sense. That's kind of what were we going to do with that anyway type of thing. I know that's the next item on the agenda, but
it kind of plays into the next.
Yeah, well, we decide. Well, exactly. And I think that one's a no-brainer. And then when we get to the next item, for those that weren't on the, you know, on the committee, we talk about each one of the different funds and whatnot, but that would certainly be my preference to them. I can also say that adopting this, assuming that we do this evening, I really think this is going to put us on some of the best financial foundational footing that the city may have ever been in. There's never been a reserve policy before, and to have come through this economy in this low point and to be in this position that we are, I think, the envy of other cities, and really sets us up well. Not out of the clear, not out of the clear by any stretch yet, but it really sets us up. It is really just wise financial planning, so I appreciate all the effort from Diana and her staff as well. So, thank you.
Councilor Kidman.
Thanks. I was going to respond to Councilman Williams' comment, too. I think I would prefer that we have the risk management as policy, not necessarily have the overage in there. And the reason being that we do have good liability insurance. I mean, we do have $1,000 deductible, but I would prefer moving that into either general or contingency, making it a little bit more available, but leaving the facilities management overage, because I think that's an area where it's safe to be over and to leave it over. But I think with the risk management, we might be able to put $57,000 to a little bit better use. And
you'll work on it.
Yeah.
So my question initially was, I don't know what the mechanism is.
Yeah.
How easy it is to take that money out of that fund and put it in the general fund, because it is a designated fund, is it not?
Yes, it is. Generally, we trace whether the money came from general fund or utilities. And I would just go back through the records and see which funds funded that money that's in there, and then prorate the refund back to either general fund or utilities.
Yeah, and because if it was easy to do that, I would completely agree with Council Member Cutabatt that would be the ideal. I'm less concerned about that fund than the facilities fund.
Yeah.
I just don't know what effort it is or if we can even take that money out. So.
Yeah, I mean, again, I would keep the facilities management in the overage position and keep it as is, but the risk management, take that down to the policy and put it in contingency or in general. So that would just be mine.
Yeah, as far as the mechanism goes, with the implementation of this reserve policy, I can do it however you want this one time.
Yeah.
It's not a fund I can normally pull money out of, but I could this one time with the implementation of the policy.
I mean, if anything, you maybe fund the employee sick leave a little more. We had a discussion about that, putting the overage from 57 into the employee sick leave instead of the risk management. You know, we had a discussion about that. So that's my opinion.
Okay. Councilman Williams, did you turn your light back on? I wasn't sure.
I didn't, but I guess just to move the meeting along then, is there a consensus among council to leave the overage in the facilities management account?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I guess we need to decide what to do with the overage from the risk management. And the two options are the contingency fund or the sick leave reserve fund, I would guess.
If I may, are those really the only two options?
No.
No.
In which case, we can we'll probably have a longer conversation because why not put that in facilities management so we can fix more of the roofs or something. And there's a lot of places that money can be used, right? And so
technology services.
I mean, there's that can be used anywhere. And you know, my preference, I'd still probably leave it where it is. And I'm sure others have different opinions on that, and that's fine. But you know, if we're going to do that, then let's figure out the best place. You know, I guess we need to do that tonight, right? If we're going to kick this off. So, we either put it into. I'd like to see it, you know, in an area that's. Maybe we haven't planned for as much, so I think the facilities management, if we can put it in there, I don't think that's a bad idea either. Especially, there's lots of maintenance items around City Hall that are just getting put off and need to be done. You know, so. But, you know, again, there's could be general fund. I mean, there's you know, lots of places that could go. Maybe some other council members have thoughts on where that should go.
Councilmember Gamble, do that before you ask your question, if I might just clarify. Are these restricted funds?
They are right now. By adopting this policy, you're deciding how much is going to be restricted. Yeah.
Okay, they're restricted funds. However, if there's an overage, can council by motion what are we doing tonight? By motion or ordinance or whatever. Take monies out and put into another fund.
It's probably a budget amendment, now that I think about it. It's, because implementing the policy is one thing and bringing the amounts up to a dollar amount is one thing with implementing the policy, but if you're just moving money from one fund to another, it's probably a budget amendment, which is an ordinance.
Councilmember Gamble.
I think I got the one question I had with Tom. Answer that we can move. From my perspective, if we're saying, hey, we want to put more basically, in there and it's above what the policy says, then should we be adjusting the policy? I mean, that's the way that I'm kind of looking at, that we have set too low. If we're thinking that, the facilities management, hey, we need more in there because we've got, stuff that needs to be done. I'm looking across the board and I see, to the point of the risk. On the management side of things, we have an info and technology services fund that shows that the variance is only 50,000 off from meeting the compliance with our own CERT fund. We could care for that one right out of the bat. So I lean towards more transferring those overages into some of the other ones, or amending the policy to a level that you guys could be feel that it should be at, as opposed to just putting more in.
Would you yield just for
that? Absolutely.
And then the next action item that we're going to take. It's going to talk about how to fund these things. So the negatives that you see on that right-hand column are based on our next item that's on our agenda are all going to go away. Based on land sales that are about to happen. So from that aspect, I see the 57, for risk management. It's like put it wherever we think, because we're going to be, that there won't be negatives if everything goes according to plan. Based on the couple land sales that we
have. The one time to make the adjustment.
Exactly.
Right. So the land sales that we get, that can go where we want to put it. But this is a one-time adjustment, is what I'm hearing from you. Correct? Based off the policy. These are restricted funds.
Yeah.
The general, the stuff that we get through the, you see where I'm going with this? That's why I understand that we think from the sales side of things, but we are counting something that hasn't quite happened yet. So that's the only. I hear what you're saying here. That would just be my preference. We have one opportunity to reclassify restricted funds.
Where should we be? Lots of great places we can put it. No, correct. That was my only point.
Totally understand.
So this portion is a policy discussion here at this point, and to the point that Councilmember Gamble raised, are some of these enough? I think it's important that, and I appreciate the deliberation and discussion that the committee had. I personally raised some concern that the employee sick leave portion of this policy at 1% of general fund budget revenues. And if do you have that number with you, Diane, off the top of your head, if all eligible employees were to were to retire
if
tomorrow
for this sick leave liability, if every single employee left as of July 5th, the city would need to come up with $869,000.
Those are all the people that believe they're eligible for.
Correct.
The bank sick leave.
Yeah,
they would have to pay it out. Yeah.
Well, that's how much we would pay out of the bank sick leave. We don't pay out all of it, but that's the payout.
And so the likelihood of that happening is slim to none. And but the reality is that we do have employees who, in the next couple of years, are potentially eligible to retire. And the numbers that were discussed with regards to the employee sick leave payoff is higher than what the policy here says it would be. So we could exhaust that policy in the next couple of years. And so my suggestion was is that we have a greater fund budget or greater policy than 1% now in preparation for coming retirements. So with that said, that's my concern. I would like one of the committee members to respond as to how or why they determined the 1% would be acceptable. Or Diane?
Yeah, we looked at historical trends, and then in looking at historical trends, that's where we came up with the percentage. But then knowing that there's a handful of employees, there's about five employees that are nearing retirement age that have large banks, that's why council was the committee was talking about adding on the extra $100,000 this one time to cover that. But other than that, they feel like the policy itself will hold up. Will be enough. As far as I was just thinking this through, you can adopt the policy tonight, and I can bring back a budget amendment ordinance that will spell out how the money is moved from one fund to another.
That'd be great.
And that would be a separate action.
Okay.
I think it sounds like there needs to be a little more discussion.
It'd be great to talk about it a little bit more.
Maybe the next finance committee meeting, we can talk about exactly how much dollars we want to go where.
If there's some more questions,
Well, I was going to respond to Councilman Gamble's comment about changing the percentages, and we have a lot of discussion about percentages. So I would not be in favor of necessarily going back through and changing those percentages. That if there is an overage in the account, the reason I suggested general. Because that's the one that gives us the most option. You can use that for
sure.
Other things versus if you do put it in sick leave, it has to be used for sick leave. If you put it in general, if you need to use it for sick leave, we can vote by council and then move it. General just doesn't tie our hands. And so to me, to have more options available to us if we have extra money, that's the route I would go. So.
Thank you, Mayor. So I have three recommendations to change up for the policy, and I also have one question, but I'll do the recommendations first. The first one is the general fund reserve policy says that it's a minimum of 17% budgeted operating expenditures, and I would just like to add and a maximum of 25%. Which basically means that we're running between 2 to 3 months banked. Because with the policy the way it says now, I don't believe there's anything that would stop us from saying we want to have a year's worth of expenses in that general fund reserve. So
any excess would just be an undesignated fund balance?
Well, I'm just saying that just to add the language that says and up to a maximum of 25%. So that we know where the ceiling is on that fund.
Okay.
That's one recommendation. On the risk management, I would also recommend to add language that adds in a maximum of 2%. Right now it's set at 1%. And I guess depending on what we decide on what to do with that fund,
if we did nothing and we left the overage, then we'd be over our balance. So I was just thinking to add language that says minimum amount equal to 1% and a maximum amount of 2% of the current year's general fund budget. And then on sick leave, to talk to the mayor's point, it says that we will put in an amount of 1% the current general fund budget. And we talk later tonight, we're talking about overfunding it by $200,000. The concern is, though, that I view that as the same as our debt. You know, it's money that we owe. It's money that we owe more next year than we do this year. It grows. And so my concern is that if we come back after the sale of the properties and we have $300,000, then there's 3 years, basically, that we don't have to fund anything there. And the money just keeps growing. So I'd like to change that language that says that our policy is we add an amount equal to 1% of the current year's general fund revenue budget until the account is fully funded. So that every year we're putting aside money.
That meets the plan. It has to meet the plan every year.
Until we get that paid off. You know, one of the things we talked a lot about was debt reduction. But we always focus on the North Kelsey bonds and not on the $869,000 liability that we have sitting right there. And so even with our policy and then overfunding it, that's still, 35% of what the total liability is. So,
until the city's liability is fully funded?
Yeah, that sounds good. That just forces us every year to put money aside and to keep adding to that.
So when you say fully funded, do you mean the $800,000 in the sick leave?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I had a question, Diane. Again, we talk about the general fund, the $2.4 million that we're short. And then we look at the utilities, and the utilities are way over. However, there are three funds that are substantially underfunded to the point of about $714,000. And in the item that we're talking about next, we don't talk about putting money into those funds for the utilities. And my question is, how do those funds get brought up to par? What's the mechanism to bring the utilities portion of the sick leave reserve, the info and technologies, and the equipment and fleet management up to?
Transfers would be made through a budget amendment.
Is there funds in the utility already that would cover those?
Yeah. Or,
okay, so we don't have an extra $714,000 that we're going to have to fund out of property sales to.
Well, I would need to sit down and talk to Brad because the fund balances are really high in the utilities right now, but that's because we have all that bond proceeds for construction projects. So they had a lot already in their reserves. I'm thinking they'll be okay, but I would need to sit down and do a little financial analysis with Brad and see how much is already spoken for in construction projects.
And that plays more into the next item, but the first thing we talk about is that we're $2.4 million short in reserves. Mm-hmm. And we already pointed out that we're really probably $2.5 million, and then if this $700,000 comes into play, then we're really $3.2 million, and that changes the next discussion. So
yeah, it won't be that much. In fact, I think the utilities have enough to cover it, but okay. I think they're going to be fine.
Councilmember Williams, the language change that you were making, I was trying to find where you were proposing that change.
It's on page. Starting on page 4A, on reserve fund policy.
The resolution.
The
attachment to the resolution.
Yes, the second attachment. The second attachment.
Yeah. No. I had closed it. I hit.
Oh, gotcha.
And all of the funds have a bullet point that says the mineral policy, and there was just
like I said, there was just three that I thought it made sense that we change that a little bit. Put a ceiling on two and put a mechanism to keep funding the same.
Council, everybody on, was everybody able to follow on that? That said, Councilmember Gearing?
Thank you. I just wanted to, and I guess you just kind of recapped some of the things that I was going to ask that we recap. So the three changes, actually, can you just say the three changes again? Because I weren't
under the general fund, Fund 001, where it talks about the Monroe policy, to just add language after the 17%. And up to a maximum of 25%,
which is
3 months.
Yep, and I'm on board with that. I couldn't remember exactly which one was in the second one.
And on risk management, add language to the minimum amount of 1% and the maximum amount of 2%.
Right. Okay. And then the last one was the reserve.
The sick leave, saying that the policy is that we add an amount of 1% until the fund is fully funded.
And so. I did one comment on that. I think that's a great idea. It is that one of my biggest concerns with this money that we have coming in is, you know, is the amount of debt that we had. And I hadn't really considered that as debt until that was brought up in our committee meeting. And so it's my mind is just as important to pay that down as it is to get rid of our delinquency bonds. And so I think that is a wise thing to do. Yeah, I don't think we'll have everyone leave all at the same time. But certainly, some folks who have been here a very long time could all leave, and we'd be in a lot of trouble. So, so from that aspect, I think those are good changes. Yeah, thank you.
Councilor Tedeman.
Well, I was going to disagree. As far as the sick leave, I mean, it's a liability, but it's not necessarily a debt. You know, it's a liability, it could happen, but to fund up to $800,000 for the sick leave, I don't think that's realistic. I think we can use the funds better. I think I'm okay with upping the percentage of what's in there. I mean, we've already talked about having $200,000-$300,000 in there. I think funding it up to $800,000 and keeping that on the books that doesn't make sense to me. The other issue of having a ceiling in there, 17, and then having a ceiling or a limit at 25%. I'm struggling with what the rationale. I mean, reserve policies are setting up a minimum that you need in there to protect the city. So I'm missing the part of what a maximum does for you. I mean, I'm missing that part. What does a maximum? Because I mean, great, the more money that you can have in there accessible. I'm asking the question because I'm missing why we need a maximum.
It goes to the point that you just made about the sick leave, that you don't want to overfund that. And so we're offering a ceiling on certain funds I don't think it makes sense that we have that reserve, the general fund reserve, having a year's worth of money that's designated specifically for that.
But the general, I might be missing something here. The general fund can be used for anything that council approves. So, I mean, it's great to have, you know, if you have extra money in there, it's great to have it. I'd hate for us to say that there's a maximum of 25%, and then we, for some reason, exceed it, which, boy, if we ever did, that would be wonderful. And then what do we force not to put it in the reserve fund and forced to spend it, or
it would go in the contingency fund.
And then it would, okay.
The general is different than the contingency fund.
Totally. Yeah. I get that. I mean, the contingency is, you know, a great thing to have. It's totally different, but I guess I'm still missing why you need a ceiling or why it is important to have a ceiling. And is that...
Isn't there an RCW that limits how much we can put in that fund?
For the contingency fund, there is.
Okay, but not the general.
But not the general.
No.
And that's all. I'm just trying to grasp why we want to limit what we have in the general. That's the fund that's the most accessible to us. We can use it, and I apologize for that. We can use it for whatever council deems relevant for that year. So I'm missing something. I'm looking at you, finance director.
I personally don't think you need a maximum, but I can understand Tom's point that it looks bad to the citizens if you're hoarding their tax dollars, if you're asking them to, you know, to pay property taxes and then you're just sitting on them. That looks like mismanagement of funds, and I think that's what he's trying to avoid.
Okay. I don't know if there's a risk of that, but if that's the point, I see it, but I still don't think it's worth a ceiling of a maximum. That's just my opinion.
Councilmember Gamble, you'll comment. So if you're saying, so if you did max out, okay, wonderful, it would go to the contingency fund. But we just said the contingency fund has a max on it. So does it just mean that we'd go to the undebted where you'd have to budget it?
Yeah, well, there's, aside from the comment that you just made about that it looks bad when we're hoarding cash, the other problem with hoarding cash is that everybody wants to spend it, and everybody starts putting their hand in the pot, whether that's for employee salaries or it's for whatever somebody thinks of. The third reason is that so that next year in the budget cycle, we don't spend a week talking about, you know, should we put more in? It's just a matter of, we have a chance to do the policy now. It was just a recommendation. It's clearly not a hill I would choose to die on either way. It was just a suggestion to avoid the possibility that we're hoarding cash and laying off employees at the same time. It just doesn't look good. So it was just a suggestion for that reason.
So would it just be budgeted? Is that what? That was my question, though. I understand your points. You're all about points you made. But let's say that you fully fund it to do it, and the contingency fund is there. What happens? Where does it go if we have excess? We can't fund any more to the general. We can't go into the contingency. Yeah, so where does excess go?
No, just get budgeted, right?
It could probably.
I'm just talking about it. It would sit in an undesignated fund balance.
It would go into the undesignated fund balance.
All right. That's where it would probably sit. Yeah.
That's what I need. Thanks.
Or another thought, if we have excess, right, that we do, we could always have property taxes.
There's a shot. Well, and if I may, you know, again, if we, let's say we funded that 50%, which is well above what our minimum is set, but then we choose to not fund the sick leave, which to me, I view that as debt. It is a liability that grows every day. It's bigger than it was the day before. And I mean, just a year and a half ago, we were fighting to put $30,000 in that account. And it always gets ignored when we start talking about debt reduction. And so, you know, it just is a way to force what I think is sound fiscal conservative, you know, conservative meaning not risky, that we reduce our liability, we pay off our debts, and then we worry about what to do with the excess when that comes. So. And the only reason on the risk management was just the question of if we overfund it, you know, do we want to put something there as well? Because again, it doesn't make sense that we overfund risk management because we are, you know, planning for the end of the world. And it just never happened. So those were the rationale for those.
So I suggest a motion by Councilmember Williams with the proposed changes, and see if it flies.
Okay, I'll make a motion to change the Fund 001 General Fund Reserve to add language to cap it at 25%.
Second.
All right. So we're going to make a motion to change. Here, my suggestion was to approve the resolution with all the changes in there, or make a motion with all the changes in there, and if it fails in total, then we can go back and make the changes rather than make a motion on an individual language.
Okay, why three recommended changes?
Well, we can.
So the request would then be to approve resolution 2012-018, adopting the reserve policy with recommended changes, or with recommended changes that Councilmember Williams made. So would that be your motion?
With all three of them.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we'll rescind your original motion that was already seconded by Councilmember Gary Helmerson. And the next motion is to approve resolution 2012-018, adopting the reserve policy with recommended changes proposed by Councilmember Williams.
Do you want me to read the three changes one more time?
No. Okay.
And I'm seconding that motion.
So moved by Councilmember Williams, seconded by Councilmember Gary. All right. Any other discussion on that? Let's see if that goes. All those in favor of the motion?
Excuse me.
Boy, you snuck that in there, didn't you?
So before we vote on this motion, because I'm going to vote no, and I'm going to vote no because I don't believe we need to fund the sick leave to 800,000. Understands liability, but I think we do a high percentage of it, and then I don't think we need a ceiling. But before I vote no, I want to thank Councilman Williams on the reserve policy and his work he did, because he was the one that did all the spreadsheet and put all the money together. So and Diane did a great job. So I want to thank him before I vote.
You can thank me by voting yes.
I'm not thankful. So I
want
to say that before I vote no.
Thank you, but no. Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right. Motion passed with Councilmember Pettibat in opposition. All right. With that, moving on to the last item under final action. That's resolution declaring council's use of funds from land sales.
Yeah. This was also a discussion and brought forward by the Council Finance Committee. Cities in a rare opportunity where a few large chunks of money are coming in. They wanted to formalize a plan of how the money would be spent rather than have it just be whittled away by everyone having a neat idea of what to do. And so they broke it down basically into three sections. The first one is the $4.5 million estimated to be received from the sale of the Galaxy Theater in NextCorp. The next group was the $7.5 million from the Sabe Walmart sale, and then the third would be the remainder of all land at North Kelsey. And so in the resolution you can see the different ways that those each three were designated to be spent, and if anyone has any questions, I'm sure the Finance Committee will be glad to answer that.
All right, Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. This is going to have to change a little bit depending on the final numbers that you come up with. So is this going to be a first reading tonight, or how do you want to do that? Because the 2.4 might go to 2.45 or 2.5, depending on what you come back with on those other two funds.
We could say, you can make the motion and say, with approving changes that the finance director may need to make.
Because the resolution spells it out dollar for dollar. Yeah. If you want to put this off, if you want to make, normally resolutions don't get a second reading, but if you want to wait, originally I was just going off the spreadsheet from the reserve policy, and I was just going to do it per that spreadsheet, but it sounds like there's been a few changes, so I'm happy to make some changes here.
Yeah,
and bring
I would
back.
Recommend that we wait until, you know, maybe the next council meeting until we figure out what's going to happen with the risk management overage. Does that change those numbers? And then I had a couple other questions. The $350 for the North Kelsey Development Fund, we already have a fund for North Kelsey, so I'm assuming that $350,000 goes into that fund.
Correct.
The $750 has an operating reserve that is going to be used to fund the general fund for the next 3 years. The question is, where is that money going to physically be parked? Is that going to go into, are we going to set up a fund similar to the North Kelsey fund that's used for just that purpose?
No. It would either go into the contingency fund or the restricted general fund balance, and then through the budget process, when you pass the budget ordinance, you would be designated, it would be transferring $250,000 per year into that year's budget.
Okay.
But the remainder of it would either sit in a restricted fund balance in the general fund or in the contingency fund.
And then the, did we get confirmation the traffic study is, that that number's sound? Because I thought I heard a range of, it could be a...
The $300,000.
Yeah.
So,
okay, we've got... I thought you had said like 150 to 180 or something before.
We did 180 last time.
Okay.
I talked to the company that did it before. He said 180 is probably a good estimate. However, just so you know, he said, another small city did it on the cheap one for 120, and another small city did it, you know, all the bells and whistles for 300,000. So, you know, there needs to be more work on what we actually want to come out of the study to, you know, get a firmer number. But I was figuring, since you had that contingency fund, we just take some money out of that and it turned out to be more.
Yeah, I guess if that money just goes in the contingency fund anyways, it probably doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So I'm okay there. And then the only other comment was the last paragraph says roughly $7 million will be received from the sale of the remainder of the land. All of this money will be used to pay the remainder of the North Kelsey debt. And by my calculation, that leaves us with about $1.42 million over what the debt, the two bonds are. And so I would recommend adding language that with any remainder to fully fund the sick leave reserve and the rest to go to the contingency fund.
Allow for discussion from other members of the council that have postponed action on this tonight, and have Diane make some recalculations and bring this back another time. But with that said, a lot of thought has gone into this for council consideration, and appreciate the diligence that the committee gave. Is there any other council members who'd like to comment or have questions for the committee with regards to the recommendations this evening? Council member Gimbels?
Yeah. So just on the sick leave, someone read that exactly how the recommendation is that you're making. I just want to make sure that I...
You're talking about on this resolution?
Actually,
the extra 1.4
for both. Yeah.
So the first one was just that instead of saying, because if you go on this resolution, it says that we're going to add 200,000 to the sick leave reserve, which then means that next year we don't have anything in it. Probably the year after that we don't have to. And so the
verbiage you specifically added
was that we keep funding it.
Keep funding
1% until it's fully funded.
Until all the liability is accounted for.
And then on this resolution, the last paragraph just talks about the remaining $7 million will be used to pay the remainder of the North Kelsey debt, but the remainder of the North Kelsey debt is not $7 million at that point. So it's 9.6.
So the reverse of this would be the extreme reverse, just like we're talking about the extreme of everybody walking out the door at the same time, right? Would be that the amount that is actually due to sick leave because you have a brand new workforce is below the minimum that you put in the place. Does that make sense?
At some point that could be, because we do have caps.
So bring the verbiage on the top side, you're going to have to put it on your
I think the, I'm sorry for me, the accumulation is different now than it was at that time, though, is it not?
Correct.
So we wouldn't get into the trouble, you know, that we would be now if five or six people left, you know, tomorrow. That with the new accumulation of...
Yeah, but do you hear what I'm saying, though? That's great,
yeah.
Right? But what that means is that the liability is not going to be... So when you retire that 800, you know, 1,000, you have verbiage in the policy that is saying at 1% or whatever... Until it's fully funded. You may be fully... Is it or? Until fully funded? Until it's... Because what happens if fully funded is less than 1%, I guess is what I'm saying.
It's 1% until it's fully funded. So if it was less than 1%, you would just have to fully fund it. Which may be half of a percent in a year, or nothing, given if there was enough. Yeah.
I didn't hear the order.
Yeah. And
so, again, on the last item, it was basically just setting the priority of what the last $7 million would be, how we would use that. And the first priority would be to pay the remainder of the North Kelsey debt. The second priority would be the employee sick leave. And the third would be anything. If there was anything left at that point, it would go into the contingency fund. Because we left just $1.4 million kind of sitting out there that we didn't talk about what we're going to do.
Questions, comments? Okay, Diane, do you have?
I got it. Yeah.
All right. Well, then we will bring that back in the future meeting, allowing time for Diane to recalculate some of the numbers. Motion to approve the extension past 8 p.m. For the business portion.
Second.
A motion was made by Councilmember Williams or Camp and seconded by Councilmember Gearing to approve the extension past 8 p.m. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. First study session's topic tonight is to discuss, first, I wanted to ask, Councilmember Williams, you brought up the traffic study. Would council like staff to pursue a little bit more in depth or a little bit more detailed, study parameters and costs so that we can bring that back to, what's that?
Well, I think that's scheduled to be brought in September.
Okay.
Already, so.
All right. So council's good then if we stay with the 150, if that's where Diane stays, and we have this full settlement. Okay. All right. I just heard 150, 300,000.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not going to cost that much.
Okay. All right. Okay. Next item is discuss proposed resolution amending comprehensive plan amendment procedures. Ms. Fowler.
Thank you. All right. As you recall, last year we made a couple changes to help speed up the process of the comprehensive plan amendment. And now, after I've been through a cycle on my own here, so to speak, with the new arrangement of the departments, I'm proposing some changes that will, I think, bring more, quicker closure to applicants and speed the process up. At the same time, not limiting the amount of public input that is available for people to give. If you look on your computer there, the red line version or the clean version, which has changed since the Planning Commission last night, it was presented to the Planning Commission last night, and they had some changes which we've incorporated into the current document. If you want, I can go through them in, one by one, or if you've had a chance to read them, you can just give me questions. So which way would you like to do it?
Councilor here.
Thank you. I had a chance to read through it, okay. So I do have a couple comments, and as I'm sure some others as well did. I just looking at page one, and I guess more comment than anything else. We, in the past, was added some restrictions on how soon someone could bring back the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to see that struck through. I think that was a bad idea in the first place. So I'm glad to see that struck through and removed. As I look through here, it looks like the overall, the real change is just speeding up the docketing process. I see that looking through, the Planning Commission still has public hearings. They still make a recommendation to us with regard to what should and shouldn't be approved as they do today. All the public hearings are still there as I look through here. So none of that's really changed. It looks like a pretty awesome opportunity to really speed things up. Ultimately, when we docket city council decision anyway. I don't think it's really necessary I think it'd be just fine if since we do it anyway, if we just, if the Planning Commission take that part out, and they're still doing everything that they do today. There's still the public hearings, there's still a presentation by the applicants, and it speeds the process up. So overall, I liked what I saw. And then specifically the red lines with regard to you know, how soon someone can bring the, bring back the bring back something that's similar, to saying that they were not docketed on any given year. Otherwise, it looks like a lot of stuff that's kind of cleaning up the language, stuff like that. I didn't have any major. I didn't have any issues at all when I saw it. It looked as though we're really speeding up the process, and all the public participation part is still there. So I liked what I saw. Anyway, I appreciate it. Didn't have a ton of time to get through everything, but didn't have issues with what I saw. So thank you.
What was recommended action?
Oh, basically, this is just introduction. Do you have any comments? And then we'll bring it back next week. It's scheduled for next week for adoption.
Councilor Ketterbeck.
Thank you. Let me make sure I understand the process or timeline. So the docketing process is where it just comes to City Council and we decide on what's docketed.
Right.
So there's no recommendation from Planning Commission. Is there a, I don't see it in the timeline, is there a staff recommendation?
If you look in, well, sort of no, but sort of yes. Let's see what page am I on, the more specific things.
Page
which
four.
Is page 7 of 11, if you're looking at the strike-through version. Brought to the City Council along with analysis of the proposed amendment in relation to the selection criteria and application checklist.
That was section 4A.
Okay. If you printed it out, you have the wrong version.
Because we
changed that. Based on Planning Commission comments from last night.
Okay. So based on their comments, there is at least a little bit of an analysis.
How it matches the criteria that have been established for docketing things.
Because my concern when I read the one that was on the Planning Commission was it was coming right to City Council without much review or analysis. And up here, we're not planners. For myself, you know, I like to have information from Planning Commission and from city staff to make recommendations and to analyze it somewhat so I can make a better determination of whether to docket it or not. Without that recommendation or analysis, it makes my job more difficult. So that was one question I had. So I guess maybe what I should do is read through the changes that you've made today based on the comments last night.
Right.
We are going to look at this next week,
right.
Correct?
Yeah, okay. Those are the red comments are the ones that were made today.
Okay, so I will look at that. Thank you. I heard a comment that it really speeds up the process, and I don't really see that.
It depends on how many applications there are.
Okay.
Right now, hopefully we'll have it done in July because usually it doesn't. In the past, hasn't gotten done until November. So there's that time, and also the docket gets done in 3 weeks rather than 3.5 months. So if there's only one or two things, that can be done potentially by the end of the year, as opposed to waiting to the next July.
Okay. So tell me the cons. I mean, are there any cons? You've told me the. What you just said is the pro, that it speeds up the process. In your opinion, is there any con to that, of speeding up, doing what we've previously done in 3 months, doing it in 3 weeks? What are we losing? Are we losing anything?
Personally, I don't think so, because basically what happened in the past was that the merits of the amendment were fully analyzed in the initial process rather than just whether or not to docket it. So basically, it was all front-loaded to whether or not to docket it, which made staff do a lot of work in staff analysis of how it complied with the comp plan rather than just being something to look at. So that is that analysis doesn't get done initially. Basically, is it something worthwhile to look at? Yes, no, that's done, and then we go into the full analysis.
So on the flip side of that, could we waste our time on the back end because we we approve it and docket it, not really having the information, and go, well, this seems good, let's do it, and then staff spend even more time during the docketing process to flesh it out, and it's not worthy. Or, I mean,
it depends on the application, I would say, depending on what exactly it is. I don't think so, in that the selection criteria, and oh, the other one is that you might wish to change the selection criteria and what gets docketed then, because the selection criteria, which I have not, I modified it slightly, but not substantially, you know, is there's not a high threshold. So if you're going by what the process really said, there isn't a high threshold to get on the docket. It's actually pretty much a...
You mean right now?
Right now.
So
yeah.
Then why change it?
I'm not changing it except to add, I took out the, which was added, the no repeats. The previous staff, I think, went farther than what the process actually did in the initial steps. And it ended up basically doing the work, you know, 1.5 times, because you had to do it initially and then redid it again through the process of the review. So it's cutting that part out, that we, it only gets done once. And it's pretty much a policy decision of the council on whether or not to consider a comprehensive plan amendment document. You know, is this something the council is interested in entertaining? Yes or no? And go from there, as opposed to here's the actual complete outcome of that process, and now you want to consider it.
I see the advantages and disadvantages to both, and that's what I'm trying to both to the way that you're proposing for speed, but I also see the advantage to the way we did it. As a council member, the more information I have to make a decision, it helps me. You know, I can analyze things a little bit better. Is this worthy to even continue through that year process of docketing it and going through all the public hearings and everything that is necessary for it to come to its conclusion? So, but I appreciate you looking at things and going, okay, can we make this better? I really do appreciate that. So I will look at these changes based on what Planning Commission, because I haven't seen these changes. I'll look at these, and I might have some questions for next week and go from there. So thanks, Brad.
Thank you, City Administrator Russell.
Thank you, Mayor. Another issue that we had talked about at staff level is that it's council's job to appoint work to the Planning Commission and their staff. So staff is in a situation where we're out doing work on projects potentially that will never go forward. And so it put us in a very cumbersome position in that if we go with the proposal, council assigns the work, then staff assigns resources to that work.
And there is a minimum criteria for what we're using, a minimum criteria today. That minimum criteria doesn't change, or there may be some additions to that. You said
changes slightly. Yeah.
Slightly, that minimum criteria is what would normally go before the Planning Commission for discussion. Here, it's coming straight to City Council for consideration. Which for some applicants it can be very beneficial in terms of timeliness, and I just think that it goes to what we've done throughout City Hall, and that is to continue to look for ways for improvement in our efficiencies and processes, which is why somebody said earlier it's true Monroe is becoming very quickly an envied municipality to work with. Councilmember Heering.
Thank you. Ultimately, like I said before, it's our decision as elected officials. It's a policy decision to put this stuff forward. You know, an application comes in. Quite frankly, I like to be involved at that level. I want to know what's coming in and does it. I also think everybody deserves their day in court, you know, as they say. And so from that aspect, you know, if we're assigning stuff to the Planning Commission to, you know, we're docketing it and we're sending it to them, I mean, nothing changes with them coming back and saying, you know, no. you know, bad idea, or no, this doesn't meet it. And again, it'll be up to us as to whether or not we take that recommendation or not, just like we do today. So from that instance, you know, the role of the Planning Commission, at least as I read this, is exactly the same as it is today, other than making it a little quicker on the entry standpoint. Like I said before, I like what I see. But I guess we'll have more discussion about it next week. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Babalka.
Yeah, a couple of quick comments. I've only been through one cycle of this process. I don't know that this year could be considered normal this past year. But I had some initial questions about this, but after we discussed with the commission last night and we made some changes today, I do think it will make better use of staff time in the initial process, the initial docketing, and we don't have any surplus of staff. The docketing procedures, it's fairly light in that there's just a limited number of criteria. It's much more subjective. But once it passes that litmus test, then the real work begins, and that's where we can concentrate our efforts. And I think that's where some of the efficiency will come in. So I think overall, this may work a little better for us.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask a question of what he said. Did I hear you say that it was a little bit more subjective at the front end?
Well, subjective in the sense that it's not a very deep analysis.
Right.
It's kind of a light, higher level look at whether it is consistent with the comp plan and the GMA and other codes. And I think the most important one is that's been added is whether it supports the vision of the city, of the community. I'm not sure how well defined that really is, but that's, you know, that's the first test. Is this good for the city?
And the only reason I bring that up, referring to your comment, is in with council making that initial then determination versus staff analysis in depth or Planning Commission recommendation, is then people might have the perception of it's more of a political issue of council saying nay or yay if it's a little bit more subjective and there's not the full analysis. And that's just a question. I'm not saying it's fact. But hearing what you're saying, that's something that I might think of. So
I think that will do an analysis and an evaluation and perhaps make a recommendation, but it won't be coming to you cold.
I appreciate that, because when I first read it, that's how I took it, but with the changes last night, and again, you know, I need to go through the changes and look at that more closely. So thank you.
Council, we do have a Planning Commissioner in the audience tonight. He's been waving his finger at me for the last 5 minutes. Don't typically call on members visiting or in the audience during the discussion. And the reason why is that I think it's very important that we hear, if we do hear from Planning Commissioners, that we hear from Planning Commission in total, not on a singular basis. Now, if Planning Commissioner want to say something during the public comment period, that would be good. But I just wanted to, you know, I see you, but I think it's important that we maintain either having comments at the public comment portion as an individual, or we have the Planning Commission as a whole to speak on a certain particular subject. So if you saw his finger or saw him waving and wondering why I wasn't calling him, that's the reason why. So, and I hope that's okay with you guys. But of course, council can say, you know, by consensus or unanimous vote that they would like to hear from the Planning Commissioner and the audience.
We follow up afterwards.
Okay. All right. Okay. Then we will move forward, bring this back, and certainly feel free, council, if you have questions in your review this week to bring those before staff via email if you like. Certainly, sometimes questions can be answered in plenty of time ahead ahead of the meeting, which would help reduce our need for discussion. So, okay. We do have some department reports this evening, and Deputy Chief, this is your first meeting in a while here. Good to see you. Thank you for the report. I hope that everybody's had a chance to read through that. Looking especially forward to Night Out Against Crime in August, but is there anything that you'd like to add to the report this evening or address with council?
All due respect, Mayor, I have nothing to say.
Thank you very much.
Honestly.
All right. Jeff, anything this evening?
A couple of things. It's been, we've had several inquiries about fees for single-family residential development in the city. Comment unanimously is they're too high. So staff has taken a look at school mitigations fees specifically. We've talked to the school district. They would be open to changing the formula. Currently, we have a formula that requires a 25% discount. I believe we're the only jurisdiction in Snohomish County that does that. Everybody else has a 50% discount to what the full loaded cost is calculated in the school capital facilities plan that's generated every 2 years. We thought it was going to be a simple process, but all things Monroe, the comp plan has bit us substantially in this process. We're working through it. We will be bringing something to you in the near future. Two possibilities exist, I think. One would be worst case scenario, we actually have to ask council to put this on the docket for next year, and we amend the comp plan to allow for this to happen outside of the comprehensive plan by ordinance. The other option would be we think there's a possibility that when you do the budget this year and do the capital facilities plan or capital facilities portion of the budget, it looks like we may be able to amend the language with relation to school mitigation fees at that time. And it would be kind of a cumbersome, ugly ordinance, but it would solve the problem until we can get into the comprehensive plan and actually fix it once and for all. So school mitigation fees are coming along, and with the interest that we have, I sent a note out at request of the mayor. We have a very large pre-application, residential application coming in tomorrow, 5 phases, 149 lots. So keep all very busy. And that helps to incent builders to come to Monroe. And just in general terms, you're looking at about $1,100 to $1,200 per unit or per house in savings. To follow along with that, with the H3O contract behind us, we can now take a look at how those funds are going to be applied, and if council makes a decision during budget to take the concession payments and put them into the parks capital facilities plan, we can recalculate those fees and perhaps bring down the park mitigation fee also. So good news on the horizon if council decides to head that direction. Other than that, the other policy issue that we've been working on is the sign code. And now that we've kind of swept the comprehensive plan out of the way for now, we're going to put a fair amount of effort into the sign code, get that crafted into draft language, and bring it to council. Those are that's kind of the report for today.
Thank you, Jeff. Paul, anything further?
One thing, yesterday I met with County Council on Roosevelt Ridge annexation. They did approve the annexation, so it will not go to the Boundary Review Board, which is a good thing. So next week you should have a resolution for a call for election in the fall.
Diane, anything? I will have a question for you here in just a second. Brad, anything in addition?
Just for your information, You got a notice yet that started work at the putting, replacing the water main across the intersection of I-2 and Main Street. So, there'll be construction over there.
City Administrator Braswell, anything?
I don't.
Okay. Before you get to the agenda, as council is aware, I sent a an advance copy of a newsletter that was sent out in July, and had a lot of great response to that, and a lot of the response that I had gotten was just a thank you, and I thought it was a great way for us to be able to communicate. Thank you, Councilmember Gamble, for kind of pressing that. As part of that, I think you may have noticed I kind of put Council's Corner in the draft, and for the first run, we just listed all the council members by name, by position, and email addresses. But I want to invite council, as council, if there's a message that council would like to submit or to get out to the public, that would be or a good opportunity or a good place. And it could be on the front page, it could be on the back page, it could be as long or as short as you want. Notebooks, of course, that would be nice. But I just wanted to make that available to you. With that said, there is a cost that is associated with that. And so I would like council to consider how often you would like to see a newsletter go out to the community, whether that's on a quarterly basis, monthly basis, or a yearly basis, which I think is way too little. But Diane, the estimate on the cost for that is
$1,800.
$1,800.
That's printing, posting, everything.
For one time. So on a quarterly basis, look at the 7,200. Or more, if council would like. So the potential is that another newsletter can go out in August, since we have had a number of issues that we've not been very, good at communicating. We can put something out. So I'm going to leave that to council to think about if there's any ideas that you might have. Understand that there is going to be a cost of about $1,800 for that. I'll send this around. When I was speaking to six other mayors at our monthly mayors meeting, most every municipality does a monthly newsletter. I believe we might have shown you a copy of Duval's monthly, which is what ours was based off, or single page, double-sided. This is Arlington's. Call it the update. They do it on a quarterly basis, but a lot of information in there. So I'll let you take a look at that. So if you have some ideas, feel free. I think it's a single page, double-sided is good, and hopefully what it will do is help to direct folks, like we tried on the first one, to our webpage for more information. So in a council message, I also want to invite or recommend or suggest the possibility of having a small snippet of information and then a recommendation or to visit our website for more information. So that's kind of how we can do that in terms of approach. But as I said, the response was excellent in terms of people getting back to me with regards to the information that was put out. Let you think about that possibility of putting it on the extended agenda for further discussion. I just wanted you to be aware of both the cost and give an opportunity to think about what you might want to do in the future. I'm not sure, so ladies first, Councilmember Ketterbach.
I was just going to say, just to comment on that, I think it was great that you sent that out. I think anytime we can reach out and engage the public and give them more information, especially positive information, that's really important. I think minimum quarterly, you know, if we can do something monthly. Have we done anything about doing like an email newsletter where we actually collect everybody's email through their water bill or something and then do an email blast monthly? You know, that would be maybe more, a little bit more cost efficient if we were going to do things monthly. So that's just a suggestion, as like a city news that we, you know, it takes a while to get the collection of emails, but when you do that, especially if they're doing bill pay or they, you know, through the water bills, we can get emails that can make it cost efficient to do something monthly. But no, I think it was great, positive. Thank you for doing it.
Councilor Geary.
Thanks. And I, actually, Mike's probably extended the agenda stuff, but I was going to suggest, I think last year, didn't we postpone a meeting when we had the National Night Out so that everybody can attend? I think you need to do that again. And maybe you're not there yet. I was just going to suggest doing that. Maybe you were already going to say that. So. Anyway, jumping the gun, sorry. But I was going to bring that up, so I'm sorry.
Councilmember Gambler.
No, I just wanted to say thank you as well. I thought it was great to think that this had been changed. I do think that sometimes, you know, a mailed copy, you know, on a quarterly basis, you know, when I look around, like at the city of Kirkland and different locations, that's pretty much the standard. They're formal, you know, whatever, you know, type paper that they have, but maybe a monthly, different kind of, you know, communicating seven different ways type of approach. But then also the updates that you guys have put on the website have been great. You know, flashing through, so thank you.
The other cities that I spoke with, Arlington, Sullivan, Barrington, who else was there? They do an email, kind of not necessarily a newsletter, but alerts. So monthly email alerts. And I know we have the alert center that people can sign up for, but maybe it, or the notify me. Can't remember how to do it. Maybe council would recommend or direct staff to start to gather all those emails, put those in. But what's the term for you guys who are computer folks? Opt out. They have the opt out option. So we automatically put them on, and then they can opt out of the alerts. What's that? If that's a way that council would like, and then what we can do is just notifications or little one sentence paragraph and then a link to our website that says for more information. It's kind of like what AWC does. Puts out to everybody. You should be receiving on a regular basis. Or is it AWC? Yeah, they have the little blurbs, and then you click here for more information. Great. All right. City Administrator Braswell.
Okay. Thank you much. Draft agenda for July 17, 2012. For the consent agenda, we have minutes for June 19 and July 10, 2012. Bill, payroll, number 3, accept public works project, Hill Street reconstruction. It's the 45-day lien period. And number 4 is H3O agreement with Cable Park. Yes.
I'm sorry. Could we just move that to final action? I mean, I'll pull it off the consent agenda anyways and just tell me ahead of time.
Under final action, we have number 1, resolution amending comprehensive plan amendment procedures. Number 2, H3O agreement. Any additions or deletions?
Just thinking ahead.
And I think it was a wonderful recommendation that Councilmember Gearing had to cancel the August 7th meeting and do August 14th, 21st, and the 28th. That works for council.
I will be gone the 21st and the 28th.
Schedule everything important.
Important is not easy.
I do.
So people want me to know I'm going to vote no on, but my no doesn't really have an effect. So.
It just does.
Show me that. Show me.
Deputy Chief, you may not know, so I'm going to just agree with me here. I'm just going to say this, that Monroe's National Night Out Against Crime was one of the largest. I've heard that it was one of the largest. I'm just going to say it's one of the largest in the state of Washington. Brag on what we do.
It's the best.
And it is definitely the best. So thank you for that, because that I think is a good practice for us to have as being participants in that National Night Out. I think was it last year, the first year we did it, or was it 2 years ago as a council? Because we're in business before that.
Last year's first
year. Yeah. So let's keep that going forward. All right. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. I attended the Snohomish County Health Board meeting this afternoon in Everett, and I just wanted to remind people that there still is a whooping cough epidemic, and they are, you know, we're really encouraging people to get their booster as an adult. And in the last month, they've had an increase of like 68 cases in a month. So it is an epidemic. And when I went to hear the Washington Secretary of Health speak, she said in her 14 years as Secretary of Health, she has never, you know, said there's an epidemic. So this is a big deal, and I just encourage everybody to get their booster or to get their shot.
Any other council members?
I'll just add, I got my shot.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
You're the baby.
Oh, that's right. Okay, we don't need to vote to extend or to adjourn. So with that, we are adjourned.